Bet.
I'm only three books.
Chapter 26. Steve and Ivan Bet, chapter 26. Okay, today is April 6th. And today we're going to read about Amasya's son, Uzziyahu. Uzziyahu ruled the second longest reign of any king in our history. And let's see that he, like so many before him, start off very good. Some things just go sour. They go south after a little while. Okay, so moving the list. This is the king we're talking about now, Uzziah. Okay, he's also called in some other places Azariah. Okay, right over here. It says, "Vayikhu kolam Yehuda et Uzziyahu b'hu ben sheishes reishana v'yamnichu oto tachat aviv Amatsyahu." And when his father Amatsyahu was assassinated, so the populace took his son Uzziyahu, who's only 16 years old, and they crowned him king to take the place of his father. Hu bana es elot v'yeshiveh liYehuda acharei shchav ha'melachim avotav. And he built up cities. You'll see that he was a great builder. And he built fortresses. And this is even in his youth. And he built this place called Eilot. Some say this is Eilat. And it says, but Mustama is someplace a little more north of Eilat, because it says he incorporated this into the area of Judah. And Eilat is very south of Judah. But okay, it could be. Alright, so it's usually not associated. Ben Sheshes Reishano Uzziyahu b'malcho b'chamishim u'shtayim shana malach b'Yerushalayim. Shem imo Yecholya b'Yerushalayim. He was 16 when he became king, and he ruled for 52 years. Right? He ruled till he was 68. There was another king, Menashe, who ruled when he was 13 and ruled 55 years. It's a long time for a king.
Yeah.
Right? Because the reason why I say it's a long time is because whatever a king has to do, usually it's very stressful, and they die young.
Yeah. Or they go bad, and
yeah, right. The oldest king of our history was David, who lived to be 70.
What'd you say? How old?
The oldest king was David. He lived to be 70.
Oh, okay.
But no king lived past 70. Vayaseh Asher b'nei Hashem kechol Asher asah Amatsyahu aviv, and he did the just and right thing in the eyes of God, just like his father Amatsyahu.
Rabbi Mordechovitz, excuse me, once said that the Isha Iti, the one who would take the Seir Lazazel into the wilderness and throw him off, will leave him, he throws him off the cliff, or he just let him there? Will let him loose?
Let's say he throws him off the cliff.
So apparently, they didn't live out the year. The guy who would do this would be dead within a year, but they were still fighting for the covet in order to do it. So this is... That has something to do with what it's like.
I'd like to see the source that says that the people who did that didn't live out the year.
Something like that. This is what it means to be a rabbi for sure. The Jews are looking for cover to such a degree they're willing to die for it.
So it says he did the right thing. Vayihili drosh elokim b'mei Zechariyahu ha-mevin birot ha-elokim u'v'mei dorsho es Hashem itzlicho ha-elokim. Very unusual pasuk. Says, and it was at a time where people were inquiring of God. They were Doresh Elokim. Right? You see in the picture, that's the A. Adhere to Torah. Okay? So, but it's not just that they adhered, they Doresh. It was that they sought out the ways of God. Right? He sought out God in the days of Zechariah. Okay? Hamevin Birot Elokim. Wow. Zechariah was a man who understood how to see God. That may mean he was prophetically proficient, but also mean he was philosophically proficient. Right? In the day of seeking God, God made them all succeed. They were all successful. Right? During the time that he sought out... During the time that he sought out God, and this, remember, we've seen this so many times in Divrei Yom. This is one of the purposes of the book, to see the clear correlation between seeking God and success. Okay? We haven't seen those guys for a while. He fought against the Philistines. Vayifrotz is Chomas Gas, Vayis Chomas Yavne, Vayis Chomas Ashdod, Vayivne Arim Ba Ashdod Uba Plishtim. He fought against the Philistines, he breached their walls. You've heard of Gat. Gat is one of the five Philistine cities. That was the home city of Goliath, Goliath Hagiti. Okay? And he also breached the walls of Yavne, and he breached the walls of Ashdod. And he built new walls where he took over those places. Now, Ashdod and Gat are two of the Philistine cities, but Yavne, I don't know what Yavne this is. Yavne is to the north. This may be another Yavne. I've heard of a place called Yavne, right? Usually translated in English as Jabnia. But Yavne is, you know, one of the places where
that's not the place where they're supposed to have studied?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, Yochanan ben Zakkai said, if we lose Jerusalem, at least we'll have Yavne. Is yeshiva there to this day? But it's hard to place that in the Philistine sphere. Gat and Ashdod, yes. Ashdod is a Jewish city today. Along the coast.
Wasn't that right near Plishtim? It was?
Yavne? No.
No, Ashdod.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Ashdod, you had to give 8 days or 7 days of Pesach.
That's a good question. The Gemara in Masechet Shviyos has an opinion that Ashdod is outside of Israel.
That's what I'm saying.
Because there was a line along the water that cut into Israel a little bit that was not conquered by the Jews returning from Babylon. So they thought that while it's part of Israel proper, but it didn't have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael.
But isn't that the time of Yeshua?
But the question of whether you keep 1 or 2 days is not a function of whether you're living in the Holy Land of Israel, but a function of, are you living close enough where the word of when Rosh Chodesh was reaches you in time? So they always kept one day in Ashdod, but they didn't always keep the Kedusha of Shemitah in Ashdod, or tithes, or other things of that sort.
So in Aza, proper, which is part of
Aza, I think.
You can hear the news in one day, unless the guy were preventing a plane of the fires.
Yeah.
Aza was one day?
Aza was one day. Yeah.
Always. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But as Reo Elokim al Plishtim Baal Arabim, Baal Yoshim, Begur Baal Hazalunim. And God helped him. Of course, God helps all those people who are upright and just in this book. Of Uzziahu and they wanted to make peace and gave him tribute. His fame spread all the way down to Egypt because he became very strong.
No sugar, of course.
No, thanks. Well, I'm shackled to be wrong. Yes, that's spot. Okay. So he is mostly conquering in the south, and his fame spreads all the way further south to Egypt. Actually, remember this was a song, Vayivan Uzziahu Migdalim Birushalayim. Remember that? Vayichaskeim? No, Vayivan Migdalim Bamidbar, Vayechtso Verot, Rabim. They took these next two psukim. I remember hearing this song on a tape of early Israeli songs from the 50s. And this is one of the songs, because they were, you know, it's very, very big that someone is conquering all these places in the south, you know. So, Uzziahu built strongholds and fortresses in Jerusalem, all the way up to Shara Pinava, Shara Gaiva, and Mikzor, and Yechazkeim. But they didn't include all these details in the song, but it says that he fortified Jerusalem significantly. And not only that, but even Migdolim Bamidbar, Vayachtsov Barot Rabim Kimikne Rav Hayolo. He built strongholds even in the desert to keep people far away. The further your stronghold is, the more safe you are. We are now up to Pasuk Yud. And not only that, Be'yachso Barot Rabim, he dug out reservoirs, pits for water. Once you have water, you can inhabit a place. Right? He had a significant amount of cattle. Those cattle needed. The cattle needs grazing land. The grazing land needs to be watered. Right. And ikorim bekormim behorim uvakarmel ki ohev adamahaya. What a great pasuk! He had farmers. He had vintners. In the mountains, in the Carmel. Carmel is the northern part of Israel, where it's extremely fertile. It's called Carmel.
That's where the Baal worship was centralized.
Ki Oheva Damahaya. He was very, he loved the land. He was ecologically aware. Right?
Sounds nice.
But it says that they farmed on the hills. Maybe you ever travel in some of the hills of Yehuda, and you see there's a big mountain, and they make these like terraces. You ever see it?
I've seen in some cultures, yeah.
It's very smart because the water runs down in one terrace, and it goes and you end up watering.
Yeah, you don't lose it.
All the water is used.
Yeah.
It waters this area, and then it. Nothing gets over watered, and then it waters the next area, then it keeps going down, and you're using all the land. I mean, you have to work with the topography you have.
Right? Yeah.
So that's what's called Beharim. Okay. Vahilu ziyav machayim osei milchama yotzei tzava lidud b'mispar pegudosam b'yad yel ha-sofer maseh ha-shoter ayad chanani misari ha-melech. And now it starts to talk about his chief of staff and his army and his soldiers. Right? So it says in Pasuk Yud Bet, Kol mispar roshei havot begibrei chayil 2,600. That's only 2,600 soldiers. No, we had many more than that. But 2,600 officers, generals and captains. Amazing. Wow. This guy was very successful. Val yadam chel tzavar 300,000 v'shivat alafim. Wow, pretty specific number. 307,500 soldiers. They did battle with great efficacy and great power. In order to help the king against his enemy.
I think a population of 2 million, because it's called Yosei Chayil after 20, and up until 50 probably is a million, right? Same thing as today, now it's 54, right? So it's like a population of over 2 million.
Then the age of fighting was 20 to 60.
It was 60.
So it's like
2.5 million.
Wow.
So that's a huge population for the time. It's immense. It's like one-fifth of what... So that's like the equivalent of 10 million today.
Yeah. So, Bayochen lohem uziyahu l'chol ha-tzava maginim u'rmachim u'chovim v'siryonot u'ksasos u'lavnei kloim. He equipped his soldiers with the most modern equipment, namely shields and spears and helmets. Here it says Shirionos. In some places it seems to be Sirionos. Here it says Shirionos.
Is that like a tank, a Shirion? Some armor, if it's a shield?
It's something that like scales, you know, they run over.
So that's the base of Shirion, which is the modern term in Israel for a tank.
Yeah, okay.
It's an armored vehicle, so you are armored.
Okay.
That's so cool. So it's a shin, it couldn't be a sin.
It's Shirion, yes. Ukshasos. Okay, so this is... It's called Arab, yeah. Right? Ukishasos are catapults, they say. Ulav Nekloim. Nekloim is that they were adept at slinging also. Right? right? That's what they say, crazy paplesi, or slings and arrows.
Yeah, it's armor.
Right?
I was in Chile on that second one. I mean, you're helping to clean the head cracks.
Vayas Yerushalayim, chishbonos machsheves choshev lihios al migdolim al pinos liro bachitzim uvavanim gedolos. Look at the three words in the row. Chishbonos machsheves choshev. What does that mean? That he had like a factory making these things. He had an assembly line. This guy was very successful. Right? Put people to work. Right?
Military industrial complex.
Yeah, the military complex that changed over the United States from World War II, from a depressed state to a booming. Booming land, right? So too in Jerusalem, they had these devices in Jerusalem designed by creative people. Right? And means that they had the qualitative edge over their vastly outnumbered enemies. That's the outnumbering enemies.
Right. The
enemies
outnumber them.
Right. Ve'et eshmo ad lemerachoki flila he'ozer ad ki chazok. And his name spread far and wide. Isn't that always how it goes?
Yep.
That we always, it's always a break, and always a. It's always a roller coaster ride. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So he fortified himself more and more and more. And as we often know, when you become so wealthy, it's so you just have to have more and more of what you can't have.
How could he afford all this?
He put people to work. He was diligent. God made him successful. He had gold, silver, he had tribute. People paying him from outside.
He's before Rabbi Shlomo.
This is Shlomo. Look at.
I'm sorry.
This is Shlomo's ten way before. Sentence. Way after.
Shlomo gets beat up for this. He types too heavily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is Shlomo's line. He's here.
How many years later is this? 200 years?
Exactly. Okay, so try to think. What does this king not have? What's the?
So
it's
sense.
Not just that
so
he can get horses. This is a great exercise right here. You're gonna love this, right? We're up to Pasuk Tet Zion, right? What's the one thing? Don't look ahead. What's the one thing he can't categorically can't have?
Oh. Well, I did sneak a look.
Have some guesses for what he wants. He wants to have an annual trip to Niagara Falls. But whatever he wants, he could probably get. He has wealth. He has fame. He has fortune. He has everything, right? So he's not like he's going to look for some things that I haven't done yet. No, he's going to seek out the things he knows he should not have. Yeah. He knows he's not allowed to have. So what is that?
Recognition.
The Cohen.
What?
Kahuna.
I didn't hear the word.
Kahuna. He wants to be a Kohen. He wants to bring the incense. He wants to be the Kohen Gadol. He wants to bring. He wants to wear the Kohen Gadol's clothes. What Narishkeit got into his head that should make such a good king?
In addition,
all the things that we've seen around us where you
it's
combine.
It's exactly what's going to happen. It happens to everybody who gets to that level. Nothing satisfies them. The only thing that satisfies them is to have something they know they shouldn't have or can't have.
But that's why we have, why Shatnas is also because it combines the vegetable kingdom and the animal, the agricultural and the animal. So that you're controlling everything.
Yeah, the Rambam said.
Because the galochim in the priests in Egypt would have their clothing made of that. Right. So, of course, we have the palace side that can't get the palace, but still. And the, so we try to combine it. And,
of course, sure, right.
Taro is a political leader and a god.
Of course, sure, says something like this.
Who says that?
Bechor Shor. Yosef Bechor Shor. He has a commentary to it.
Yosef somebody?
Yosef Bechor Shor.
Who
was it? He was a Rishon. Yosef of Orleans. So, the Gemara says that Haman also suffered from this. He had everything, right?
Oh, yeah.
He has, he's the favored advisor of the king. The queen favors him, right? He's invited to all these parties. The king only uses him as an advisor. He's have all the great wealth of the land. So what irks him? When one stupid little mosquito doesn't want to bow to him, why should that bother him? Excuse me, I'm going for it tomorrow. But in his mind, what's Mordechai? Why should he care about Mordechai? So that is just so debilitating for him. Because that's the one thing that he's not in control of. He can make everybody bow down to him. So the one person that does, none of that means anything to him, he says, as long as I see Mordechai not bowing down to me. So the Gemara has something interesting. The Gemara in Megillah wants to show hints of the whole Megillah Esther story in the Torah. Why it does that with Esther more than other stories? We can debate from commentaries. Right. So we want to see, where does the Torah actually mention? So Esther has a hint, and Mordechai has a hint. Where is Haman's hint?
Aminah Eitz.
He says, God, Adam, did you eat from the tree I told you not to eat from? Because, Haman had already set aside this tree for Mordechai to swing from, and he's going to eat from it. Right? Yeah. He wanted someone else to eat from that tree, but he's going to eat from it sooner than he thought. But what is the similarity, though, is that Adam and Chava also had everything. They had everything. So what's the one thing they obsess over? Not the 20 million things they have. The one thing they don't have. So that's what it's poor Uziyahu. It's just human nature.
Can I say something in defense of just hit me now, Adam and Chava?
Yeah.
Not the Nachash, but who's just a tool. Because human beings feel their contingency. But at that point, we didn't. We were more. Were we immortal? Death didn't exist for us, so we weren't aware of it. How does that work?
Okay, all the more so. Is that you're in such a great place right now.
No, were we aware of death?
It's inevitable that when the human being gets so consumed with this acquisition, if you catch yourself in time, then good.
Can I propose something?
But if not, I'm not saying it has to. It's inevitable. It means that it's inevitable that the person lets the wealth get to him.
Can I propose something the other way? Having known people who are very wealthy as clients and not understanding how enough is never enough and how they're all neurotic about holding on to their position, that it could be a function of our contingency and our awareness of our mortality and limitations, and we're, no matter what we have, we say, in the end, I'm going to end up enough, or I'm going to end up as nothing. But if I can have everything, then maybe I'll never die. That's the whole reason for a consumer society. It's not just to give people what they need. It's to give them bidafka certified, more than they need. 400 pairs of shoes. A house that's 30 stories above so the riots won't reach me. Everybody living near a river or a park so that they can have sustenance. Because we basically are motivated by fear. So I'm not saying it's a defense. It's an explanation, not an excuse. That we want everything, we want to be God, not because we have gaiva and we're bad, but because we're terrified, and God lives forever, and we don't. So if we can get half a piece of this... So
that's why God gives us messages all the time. That's why he gives us a month that fell every day. So you feel, don't look for tomorrow. You got today? You're allowed to take out insurance, to be sure. And you're allowed to put money for a rainy day and put money in the bank. But there has to be some kind of balance. Everything has to be a balance. We have to balance the competitive spirit necessary for us to succeed without getting lost in the... look what competition does in one of the very first stories in the Torah. It made one brother kill a brother. Right?
Because he wanted God's favor, because then he's...
Okay, so they competed,
from punishment.
They competed over God's favor.
What I'm trying to say is...
That could be a good thing, but it can also be a very bad thing. So the Torah tells you the story in order to learn those lessons.
And it's bad for you, clearly, but the motive comes out of terror. out of fear that underlies it is...
Yeah, what's going to happen to me because God didn't favor me like you favored my brother?
He's going to kill me.
And then shortly afterwards, there's a story of a very cooperative spirit, the tower that everyone's building together.
So they all get together and say, let's make a socialist society where we bring heaven on earth or bring earth to heaven.
And God doesn't want that either.
Because he's telling us, no, I'm God, you're not.
So what are the two stories together? What are the two stories together coming to teach us?
Sociology and psychology.
We want some combination. We want the best of both without getting hurt by the worst of both.
No, we also need the reality that we're mortal.
Okay.
And
good.
Still to be at peace with it.
This is so necessary to work on this chapter because it is so hard for me, for someone like us to understand, what bug got into his head to do this?
Yeah.
The answer is he sought out. He sought out the one thing he knew is closed to a king of Israel.
You had the sanctuary laws coming up, and you probably had it in the shul, that you couldn't have... a lot of the Acharonim, or even 100 years ago. Over a period of time, every once in a while, they said enough. Right. Chasanis, bar mitzvahs, whatever.
Yeah,
have
but it's
to have
kept in the breach. It's kept in the breach.
But I'm saying it because, well,
the rabbi says, I'm not going to your wedding if you the Belzer Rebbe will say, I'm not going to a wedding if it's. All right, so that person will stop donating to the Belzer Rebbe. If he's losing $500,000 by not going to the wedding, then he'll go to the wedding. But I'm using the Belzer Rebbe. He's very powerful. He does. If he won't go, if they listen, he won't go if they make it too grandiose.
According to Satmar, he has an appetite, actually.
Anyway, I've met him.
Yeah, he's a large fellow.
So, but the point is that if it depends on the clout you bear, it depends on the.
What I'm trying to say is that even among front people. They'll go wild on stuff that's how much is enough. So you have it in your shul, and then when you have the threat, then say, what, you're telling me what to do? And then you end up losing the congregant.
I agree that this is a major challenge for us today.
But it's all here. It's all based on this. It's human nature.
Major
and it
challenge.
Isn't necessarily God that said, look how choshev I am. That means
all
I can protect my family.
No, we... Yeah. Okay, let's go on.
I keep thinking, couldn't there have been a prophet that would warn him?
You could be the chazan. You could be the chazan. You could be the davening on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur.
Humble, a little more.
Right. You could be the chazan Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You can lead the benching at every meal. You can even get the first aliyah that's not left off because it goes always just a little kohen. We give you all kinds of kavod in a religious sense. You have to offer the ketores.
Can I tell you that
you didn't learn from Korach?
Non kohanim don't understand, and it's svardim. And when they do the birkas hakohanim, they say v'samu et shnia b'nei Yisrael v'ani avachem, that Hashem is a pasuk from Torah that you shall. The kohanim are just painting the target. God gives the blessing. A kohen is a tool.
Uh-huh.
People who are not kohanim say, "Oh, it's a berinta, it's a big deal."
It's machlokes, but it's one opinion. Really.
What?
Whether the kohanim are actually the vehicle, or they're just an agent, or
it's the reisen, no?
It's machlokes. Whether the kohanim are the ones blessing.
Still, the bracha comes from the Yiddish anyway.
Fair enough, but it's your kohen, right?
Yeah. So I'm saying that people on the outside who are not kohanim think it's such a big deal. For us, we feel we're just tools.
But so Uzio, he can't...
So he doesn't understand, he's on the outside.
Yeah, he can't fathom that what, just every... Any Kohen doesn't
Kohen's
have to be royalty.
Job.
He says, yes, every Kohen is royalty.
We're not.
But
royalty, we're not Yehuda.
The royalty means every Kohen... Every male child of yours can do something I can't?
Well, every firstborn was a Kohen until
Hasidah. Okay, so there is... All right, but that's bad. It's in the past. Let's go. And when he became so powerful, his haughtiness brought him to ruination. So what's the terrible trespass here? Why? Because the boundaries are very clear. I spoke about that this past Shabbos, about God wants the boundaries to be very clear in his sanctuary. The sanctuaries of the pagans were places of terrible behavior, anything goes, and the behavior was marked by licentiousness and even murder. They killed children in these temples. And God says, once you start to relax my stringent rules. It's a slippery slope. Right? So, the person with the same name, right? Azariah HaKohen came to him with him. 80 Kohanim followed him there. Now, the king controls the army, right? So, Vayamdu Ahuziyahu HaMelech Vimrulo. Notice they don't even call him king. If you want to be one of us, okay, you're a Kohen like us, we're just going to call you Uziyahu. You can't be Kohen and king at the same time.
So they tried to tell him.
Leave the Mikdash. This is a trespass. We've been very careful not to do this all these years. It's only for the Kohanim to do this. Now, what would be terrible if a non-Kohen would go up to with you guys to Duchen? I don't know. As long as he doesn't make a bracha. Big deal. He goes up to do the first aliyah, you know. But this is serious stuff. Right? Ask Nodav and Aviyu about what happens when you do something like this.
He goes to Duchen with a bracha.
Right?
Not a via of Kohen.
So he says, Tzemin HaMikdash. Right? It's not for you to do this. Right? Now, the other time in our history where the opposite was true, where Kohanim wanted to be kings, it also didn't go well for us. As you know. It was the Hashmonoim after the Hanukkah story. So let's keep these two separate. So Uziyahu got very angry with them. In his hand was a scepter, for the incense. Oh, this is bad. Just when he showed anger, tsaras, this boiled, sprouted on his forehead. Now, if someone has leprosy, they shouldn't be off anywhere around that whole area, let alone. Picture that you have the outer area, the women's section, Ezra's Noshim. Then you have the Shar Nicanor. You have the place where the Levim sing on the 15 steps. You walk through that door and you're in what's called the Azora. We have the big Mizbeach, and on the other side of the Mizbeach, you have the entrance into what we call the Beis HaMikdosh, which is called the Ulam Heichal and Dvir. He was in that Heichal. We have the incense, the what's called the Mizbach HaKtores. And in there, he sprouted leprosy. You were not supposed to be in here. Leprosy is worse than death defilement in such a place.
How did he catch the leprosy? That's contact.
Because he did. No,
it was something miraculous from God.
Is there something Lashon Hara involved here? With the tzaras and
the Maran Arachin says seven things bring tzaras. So Lashon Hara is one of them.
And one of them is what he did?
One of them is haughtiness. Now what the Yoker shows is that all seven are intertwined. But that haughtiness often causes us to speak Lashon Hara. Because what makes you turn down someone else is your own feelings of inadequacy, which are made up, which you have to make up by feeling haughty about yourself.
And therefore?
Which is what the Gemara says, called posel b'mumo. Usually when we talk about against someone else, we're really talking about ourselves. We're talking about our own weaknesses.
And the beginning of Tanya is you're not allowed to look at yourself negatively, b'shefel.
Okay, but
because otherwise
you can understand your own gifts and talents without feeling haughty.
Because I'm putting not on somebody.
Haughtiness, I think, is part of the shidduch crisis. When someone's on a date, especially a blind date, they're thinking the whole time, "How is this person good enough for me?" Instead of thinking, "How am I good enough for that person?" That's all they're thinking. How is this person good enough for me? And it crumbles a marriage. Each one is thinking, does that person deserve me?
It's the nature of the individual is less, that's the problem. Is that we're too assimilated, we're too Western.
Could be.
Yeah, well on the other hand, I mean, if you're supposed to think well of yourself, on the other hand, you should be aware if you have a problem with that waterness or whatever.
Absolutely.
So, then maybe you don't want to watch.
So the Gemara said there were practical things to do. And even the stories of the people who went into exile, the rabbis themselves, who who they felt they should go to places where no one recognizes me. Ah, it's good that way, you know.
Is that Golos?
Yeah, you do.
Not
they, Nevada,
not.
They come to Golos, yeah, it's called Golos, yeah.
So there should be a Gornish.
Yeah.
Didn't the Vilna Gaon do that?
I think so. I think, yeah, the Vilna Gaon used to travel to places where he knew no one knew. They had their pictures then. Where he knew no one knew him, just to, in order to be humbled.
I think he also wanted to do his his geometry and not be challenged.
It's actually a famous story, is that he had a driver who took him every place where he needed to go. And one time, and the Vilna Gaon was just, you know, so in demand for places to ask, you know, bring up their questions. So there was one place where questions were quite easy, and the driver said, "You know, I'm not a Talmud Chacham, but I've learned a little, and I could have answered those questions myself." So he said, "I'll tell you what, in the next town, they don't know who's who. I'll make believe I'm the driver, and you go and answer the questions. And you say you're the Vilna Gaon." So he gets up and they start asking really, really difficult questions.
He's actually with Shabbos. Right?
Oh. So he doesn't know what the answer is. And he says, "What? You call that a difficult question? That's such an easy question, I bet even my driver can answer it."
Oh, that's cute.
Let's call my driver, let him answer it. Okay, Chav Aleph. Leifanei lava zoryahu kohen harosh v'chol kohenim behu haya v'hinehu mitzara b'mitzcho v'yaviluhu misham. And they saw that, they looked at him, and he finally got the word that he was leprous, and they took him out of there. V'gam hu nidchaf latzeis ki nigo Hashem. And he was himself rushing to get out. He understood that he had to get out of there. V'hi uziyahu melech mitzara ad yom oso. And he was leprous till the day he died. V'yeshev beis hachofshis. This kind of place is actually well attested in the ancient world. I mean, how should we translate it? The word chofshi means like a leper's house, right?
Place of asylum.
Like an asylum, right?
Chofshi means free.
Free of everything. So you have asylum, you're free from everything. You know, that's where
they serve you, you're not working, you're not part of society, so people come and bring you food.
Okay, so... So that's where he stayed for the rest of his life.
That must have been a humbling experience.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah, that's exactly what it is. But Yosem Benoah Beis HaMelech Shofet HaSamaritz. And his son, notice it says Shofet. Rabbis see that he's like the atonement for his father because he was so humble. Yosem never called himself king.
That would straighten you out, right.
Never called himself king. He said, because he called himself Shofet. So this resolves a contradiction because in Divrei Yamim it says he was king for shorter than it says in Melachim, because he's really served as king at this point. Weren't there some first ladies that served basically, I think, the end of Wilson's presidency? He was so sick that he wasn't making a single decision the last year or two of his presidency. And, sometimes, you know, you're not making any decisions. Someone's making decisions for you, so who's the president?
Like,
who's the king?
Like Cardinal Richelieu when Louis XIV was a child.
Yeah.
The great eminence. But it's also interesting because the Shofet is what Hashem wanted us to have. He insisted on a king, so he's a tzaddik. He's going back to being... He's taking the honorific of a Shofet to say, I don't want the guy, but I'm trying to do kapara for the Avera. It's not an Avera, but the Jews wanted a king.
Shmuel
God
might have,
is not the king.
Shmuel might have seen it this way. Yeah, I can go along with this. All right, so I'll tell you this. Yosam, this guy who's being the Shofet, is the favorite king of the Gemara. The Gemara has hard things to say about David, about Shlomo.
But he doesn't call himself a king.
Well, he
so
became
it's
king when Uzziah actually did die.
He has all the halakhos of the king. He walks with the Sefer Torah.
Was king. After what?
After
his father died, yes. But during those 22 or 23 years when his father was alive, while being leprous, he served as Shofet, but was the acting king. They call it acting. You know.
Did he walk around with Sefer Torah in public like a king has to? I mean, all halakhos of the
king. Until his father actually died. It says, V'yesed Yivrei Uziyahu Rishonim Achronim Kosav Yishayahu Ben Amotz HaNavi. You know that. There are stories about him in Sefer Yishayahu. V'yishkav Uziyahu Im Avosav V'yipru Oso Im Avosav B'stei HaKvura Asher L'mlochim Ki Amru Mitzorahu V'imloch Yosam Ben Otachtav. And when he died, They buried him in a special place because he died leprous.
Really?
Now, what's interesting is that Divrei Yamim does not tell us something. This is usually what Divrei Yamim would do. Does not tell us something that Malachim does tell us about Uzziah's reign. Is that during his time there was a devastating earthquake in Israel?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see the you see the pictures? Which one is smitten with leprosy? I'm not sure. It's missing the letters, but the H, I think, maybe, I'm not sure. But there was a devastating earthquake during his time.
Oh, I see the top of a building fall. No,
yeah, it could be. It could be that. Right.
Is that Amos, right, the prophet? This is a different one.
Amos, Micha, and Yeshayahu, Hoshea, all gave prophecy during the time of Uzziah.
So Amos is spelled
Tzadi? Yeah, Amos is, in the Gemara says Amos and Amatzia were brothers.
So why don't we say Amos?
So Amos is a different person.
It's a different person.
Right.
And
Samach.
Ben, whatever, the one whose wife didn't treat him well, and the one who talked about Hamas, that God will punish us for not treating widows and orphans well. That's Amos, right?
That's certainly one of Amos' messages, yes.
But that's not Amos. That's not
getting
his father. It's a different
Amos prophet. Is Yeshayahu's father. Amos is a contemporary of Yeshayahu who spoke against the
son of Amos the prophet, right?
So, world decay. Yeah, yeah.
So
it's different. This is a totally different thing.
Okay.
So here is what Devarim doesn't tell us about this devastating earthquake during the reign of Uzziah. In fact, in Malachim it says that the earthquake came when he was doing this avoda.
Oh.
Now that's convenient. Israel is above a tremendous fault line.
Oh.
There have been some devastating earthquakes during Israel's history.
Tzfat, yeah, right?
Especially
Tzfat,
yeah.
Tiberia. Yeah. There's a prophet said that in Tiberia, the roofs, the houses shouldn't be that great.
Yeah. That's the Sharon. It's the Sharon.
That's
in the Sharon. Yes, could be for that also, but because the soil is very very loose, and sometimes it gets to quicksand. But yeah.
Right.
Okay, we're going to stop here with the Berachah.